What's up, everybody? We are going to talk about the movie Pacific Rim and some economics behind it today on Nerdometrics Episode 3. Now, I love giant robots, and I love giant monsters. So the movie Pacific Rim is tailor-made to my tastes. In fact, the only way to make me enjoy this movie more would have been for me to have chicken and waffles while watching. Like any self-respecting nerd, I went multiple times. And each successive time I went piqued my curiosity more and more about the numbers behind it. There were two things that fascinated me. The first one was something that fascinated me, the frequency of kaiju attacks. The second one started as a mild annoyance, then grew into something much larger than that. The anti-kaiju wall. For those of you not familiar with the film, in the continuity of the film, giant monsters attack the Earth. We counter the giant monsters by building giant robots. But there becomes opposition to the robots themselves. Are we spending our money as a world in the right way building these robots? Why not build something like the anti-kaiju wall, which would keep these kaiju, these giant monsters, out of our business and not waste the money to build Jaegers? Well, for me, something didn't sit quite right about that. Regarding the frequency of kaiju attacks, I met with an unpleasant surprise. What was laid out in the movie led me to expect the numbers to look a certain way, and then once I ran the numbers, it looked nothing like it. Regarding the second thing, the economics behind the decision to either build Jaegers or divert money to an anti-kaiju wall, once I crunched the numbers on that, I knew I had to talk to somebody, or specifically, multiple somebodies. Now, this Pacific Rim episode was originally intended to be a small discussion that we added on to the end of Nerdometrics Episode 2 when I was joined by Kyle Yount of the Kaiju Cast. However, it became obvious quickly that this would need its own episode, and through a stroke of good fortune, Kyle Yount of the Kaiju Cast and Andy Campbell of the podcast Kaiju 101 were both able to join me so we could talk about the numbers behind Pacific Rim. Here's how our conversation went. I am fortunate enough to have with me a mini all-star team of podcasters on the line. I have Kyle from KaijuCast.
That
is
me.
Have Andy Campbell from Kaiju 101.
That's me.
And so we're just talking through Pacific Rim. What we're talking about is there are two things that popped in my head and just I couldn't get out of my head the more and more I watched Pacific Rim. The first one was really something when I first sat down to attack it, I was excited to attack it, and then I just started to get mad because the numbers didn't line up like I totally expected them to. So it was actually a surprise, a bad surprise. And the reason it was a bad surprise, I'm going to set this up a little bit. I have a theory about bands selling out. And in my universe, when we talk about bands selling out, only one band in the history of the universe has ever actually sold out. And that band is Metallica. The reason, even though I love Metallica, is because before they made their first video, drummer Lars Ulrich of Metallica specifically went on record to say, "We're never going to make a video." In fact, he said, "We're never going to make an effing video, and no one would ever want to make an effing video." He said that in an interview. A couple years later, they're making videos, they're winning Grammys, and it's like, okay, well, you kind of compromised everything that you said. You went back on everything you said. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And it hits home for me as a Metallica fan, my friend.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, it honestly, it wouldn't have even, I wouldn't have even cared, except it mattered to you. You went on record, dude. You know what I mean? Like, you said you didn't need videos, and you said videos sucked, and now you're making a video? That part was the part that always kind of bothered me. So, in that tone with Pacific Rim, the thing that kept sticking in my head is that, for those of you unfortunate enough to have not seen this film, one of the characters is a scientist in the film, and he says, politics, poetry or something like that, those things are lies. But numbers are the closest thing we get to the hand of God, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I love numbers. I mean, this is a metrics podcast based on numbers, right?
That is apparent that you love numbers, my friend.
Dude, so when I sat down for these numbers, what I was expecting when I looked at the spacing of the kaiju attacks, right? I was expecting to see something that was really clean and gorgeous and linear. And what I got was the hottest freaking mess I've ever seen in terms of the numbers. You know, and this graph will be put online so that everybody can see it while we're talking to it. But what I did was I took every documented kaiju attack that I believe I saw was verified as official canon. Kyle, thanks for that link, the one where you can follow Travis Beecham, because he does answer all kinds of very cool questions on his Tumblr about minutiae of the Pacific Rim universe. It's really cool.
I hope you start up your own Tumblr just so you can start talking to him and he can be like, who is this nut with all the numbers?
Why does this guy care so much about the frequency of kaiju attacks? So he mentions on his Tumblr that that everything's canon, right? And that's always important because someone asked him a specific question like, okay, is movie official continuity? And anybody who's familiar with like Star Wars, Godzilla, any of these huge universes that are self-contained, you always want to know, okay, what's serious and what's not? You know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
In Star Wars's case, I believe Lucas considers almost everything official canon with the exception of the Star Wars holiday special, which makes it watchable. Actually, yes. I'm totally kidding. It's completely unwatchable.
Star Wars is a hot mess in and of itself, just from the standpoint of the levels of canon. Like,
correct.
Basically, there's like A, B, C, D versions of canon.
Some things are like, okay, this is completely official. And then some things, it's like, it's kind of official, you know?
Yeah, so like when you get something like the Marvel series, which, you know, says, oh, Boba Fett was part of the Mandalorians and they did this. And then George Lucas says, actually, many years later, I'm going to make episode 2 and Boba Fett's going to be a clone of, you know, he just completely says, no, my canon trumps your canon.
Yeah, he's sticking a big middle finger at the Marvel Comics editors from, what, 1977? Is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah, something like that.
So, so an important thing about Pacific Rim is that everything is canon. So, therefore, these 38 kaiju attacks that I've chronicled are all actually real attacks. And again, where I got them from was from the novelization, which has much more detailed information on all of the kills, specifically by the four Jaegers that we all see in the movie. And not only that, but there's another gorgeous bit of information where Tendo Choi thinks to himself he'd seen 48 kaiju, or he says 4 dozen kaiju, and 17 Jaegers. And those two things are also like fist pumping moments of delight for me, right?
Nice.
So
yeah.
So here's what we have. We have 38 kaiju attacks. And based on what we know about numbers not lying, what the graph that has time between kaiju attacks should actually look like is the biggest bar should be furthest left, the second biggest bar one to the right, you know, around half of that. And then the third biggest bar, half of that, the next bar to the right, half of that. So what you should get is kind of like this curve that gets very, very close to zero, but never touches it and continues to do nothing but flatten out to infinity. Does that make visual sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then instead what we have is this, which just looks like a big hot mess. And not only that, but an important point here too, it would probably look like a little bit less of a hot mess because now that I'm looking at it, there actually are two mystery attacks that I didn't account for in there, but they're very close to continuity. So in fact, there aren't 38 attacks, there are 40. They mentioned in the story that in the year 2023, only two kaiju attacked. That was an apparent lull in the kaiju that were being sent. So 2023 actually has two more attacks that I'm just noticing now did not get logged. That doesn't really change the fact. I mean, that one bit of information doesn't change it. That was the first thing in terms of the numbers that just kind of drove me crazy. Do you guys have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I noticed the exact same thing when Kyle first showed me these numbers. Is you would expect it to, you know, get more frequent as time goes on. But, you know, towards the end, they go over a year without an attack. It says 482 days between attacks.
Yeah, and again, even if we count the two 2013 wins, if you assume that, which we should, they're still evenly spaced, and that 482 goes down to like 180 or 200 or something. It's still wrong, and
yeah,
it still doesn't line up.
Yeah. In the movie, he's big blackboard full of numbers, and he's supposedly able to predict these kaiju attacks. But looking at these numbers here, how could he sort of see any pattern out of it?
There's no pattern at all. I mean, again, maybe it's because he has multiple equations. I'm old school, and I felt like simple algebra was probably the easiest way to figure this stuff out. Yeah. Not the Goodwill Hunting-esque blackboard that he has.
I thought the same thing. It's like, you need all those numbers just to figure out an average time between attacks.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So you have all these numbers, and this is fourth grade algebra, right? Yeah. Kyle, did you have anything on it? Any thoughts?
No, I just had a question. When Gottlieb was up against the chalkboard and like sort of talking to himself about carrying the two to the tenth power, did you guys catch anything that sounded legitimate in what he was saying? Or was it just only important when he slid down the ladder and said his spiel about the hand of God?
I couldn't make anything out, and that's actually a good point, because I saw the film in the theater four times, and by the third time, I knew that I was going to do, maybe not this podcast, but I knew I wanted to at least calculate it, because my own curiosity was just driving me crazy at that point. So it was only on the third and fourth time where I tried to really focus on it, and I made a bunch of notes on my phone, and then after that, that's when I got the novelization. You know what I mean? So I didn't have this kind of level of scrutiny while I was watching it, but I didn't really pick out anything. And more to that point, nothing in the novelization was there. You know, the novelization, for anybody who has not bought it, I could not recommend more. Even if it's the audiobook, it's very cool, because the audiobook is about 9 hours long. So what you basically get is you get to extend the length of the movie out by a factor of four. And you get to really like soak in every scene and a lot of the characters' internal thoughts. I don't want to spoil anything for you guys from it, but totally recommend it. It is a blast. And there's all kinds of nuggets from the Pacific Rim universe in there. Specifically, whenever anybody drifts. The drifts are way cool.
Yeah, I heard the beginning of the when Yancey and Raleigh first drift in the film. I heard the beginning of that in the audiobook. And it's very interesting the way they bring up specific memories, and none of them are really connected, from one to the next. There's no sort of linear thought process in those memories. It's just kind of literally random bits from their own like knowledge of each other.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what's cool. And like you, I heard that first drift, and immediately I was thinking to myself, ooh, the drift with Mako is going to be cool, right? And then you get to the drift with Mako, and you hear that, and you're like, oh my God, the drift with the kaiju is going to be even cooler, and it is. It's awesome. So to that point in the novelization, they didn't make any mention of it. And when I was hunkering down for the novelization, there were certain things I'm like, I hope they shed more light on this. I hope they shed more light on that. And in some cases I was right, but in this case, they didn't put any more of a spotlight on anything than what was there. Yeah.
So there were no documented attacks in 2023, or there were two?
There were two attacks in 2023 without a date. So I technically should have included them on my graph, which would make attack number 25 not have such a gaping continuity hole. It would make it more like, but it would still have three large bars in the spot of the one. It wouldn't fix things, that's for sure.
Right. It would still be down one attack.
Yeah. Yeah. And but anyway, after looking at this, I felt it was only fair to look at it a couple different ways, right? So then what I did was I worked forward, and I used the information that was in the movie, where the character actually says, well, we know what K-Day is, right? We know the date of the first kaiju attack. And then what he says is, in the first the first attacks were spaced out 24 months, and then half of that, and then half of that. If you just say attack number one was August 10th, I believe, August 10th, 2013. you know, attack number two, half of that, and so on and so on. What you end up getting to is like, you get a double event halfway through like 2014. Like the entirety of it takes like a year, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I even said, okay, well, maybe he was wrong. Maybe he meant a full year, but that only really adds a year to it. You know, you then get to the double event by August of 2015. So there was really no way of doing it, you know? And then I even tried to do it in reverse and work backward. But you still only have, I mean, if you work backward from January 22nd, 2025, and you assume a little bit more of what they're saying in the book, which is, I think they were 7 days apart at that point, then by the time you go like 10 attacks in the past, or actually 12 attacks in the past, you're at 1946. Yeah. So that didn't work either.
Yeah.
No matter how many ways I sliced it or how much sense I tried to make of it, there just wasn't any. And I mean, you know, Andy, I know you make this point with the science stuff. You know, people ask you, oh, are you trying to take the fun out of it?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I mean, that's not the goal. The goal's not to sit here and say the continuity is garbage.
Yeah.
It's just more of like, okay, well, you know, you're saying this about numbers, and here's what the numbers say. Let's have some fun with it, and mm-hmm. let's attack it like a statistician would.
Yeah.
I mean, further to that point, I guess the thing that surprises me is this is a movie and a continuity that has massive attention to detail in a lot of things. You know, I listened to your podcast, Andy, on the science stuff. And of course, the science stuff is mind blowing. I think my favorite one was that it actually would take 60 choppers to lift a Jaeger. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. And in the movie, they show 8, you know, tethered to the Jaeger. And even I hadn't done any research going into the movie, but even, you know, when you first see that, you're just like, there's no way that 8 Chinook shell helicopters are going to be able to carry this 20 ton robot out into the middle of the ocean.
Yeah, yeah.
And the website that I got that information, he actually sort of drew a picture of what it would look like, this grid of 64 helicopters.
That would be crazy.
Visually, I can see why they went with just the 8, because that would have been way too weird to look at all these helicopters carrying this robot.
Could you even like get 60 plus helicopters to fly in that kind of formation to carry one Jaeger?
Safely? No.
Yeah. He's all over the place, Captain.
Yeah, yeah. You couldn't even do like varying altitudes or anything, huh? You couldn't have like levels of 8 each or anything like that with super long cables?
Well, no. I guess, you know, maybe the cable would probably get caught in the prop. I guess we'd be concerned there. They would all have to be flying in a plane.
Can I use the force to explain any of this?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm gonna veto the force.
I tried that on a Star Wars one and it didn't work either, but it was only fair to give it a try here. But yeah, I mean, that was it. It was just more of like, God, this is a universe that has so much attention to detail, and it kind of boggled my mind that this part seemed like a part where I just didn't see that attention to detail for whatever reason.
Yeah,
but
it would have been so easy to, you know, just go back and double check your math and make sure that it is logically consistent.
Yeah, yeah. Or go with some kind of really weird mathematical sequence, like some sort of, you know, I don't know, you could do like a modified Fibonacci where there's like a pattern at least, and it takes a while to get the pattern before you go like mind blown, you know, something cool like that.
Well, maybe they will be in the sequel.
Yeah, yeah. So that was the first thing. That was the timing. And again, that was the one of the two things that was a surprise, because I was really looking forward to sit down and have the numbers line up and be clean. But, and then there's the second thing that wasn't a surprise. And Kyle, you know, that based on conversations and on texting and stuff like that, this is something that's just progressively driven me crazier and crazier. Feel free.
Oh, I believe it.
Why? What the hell point does the wall serve? Right?
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, let's just stick with stuff in the movie. There are at least, what, dozens to 100 mile gaps in the wall?
Yeah.
There's got to be, right? Because the wall, well, first off, they're building it during the movie. So there's got to be lots of gaps in the wall.
Yes.
I believe Travis Beecham was recently asked about the wall, and his response to that was that the wall, while it was a literal device to use in the plot, it was more of a not a hypothetical, but it was more of a, like, walls are what politicians put up kind of thing. So it was a more of a inference towards how he feels about politicians than actually really working. Because someone did say, like, why would someone actually think that the wall would be a good idea? Why would it work?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I mean, heard it explained that it was a way to, you know, have the poor working class closer to the danger. Well, you know, the rich people were able to live comfortably inland, away from the monsters.
I would think that people in the Midwest of the United States would be pretty safe from a kaiju attack.
But, I mean, but to that point, and first of all, I mean, it should be obvious by now to anybody that's listening to this, but this level of detail and obsession only comes from you really, really liking something. You know what I mean? Like, this is definitely a labor of love. Inside of that universe, and I believe we had this discussion on the as part of the Godzilla discussion too, Kyle. Okay, I get that it's a statement on politicians. I get that all those things, but one of the things that delights me about the Godzilla universe in whatever Elseworlds reality we're talking about, because of the weirdness of the continuity and the flows of the year-to-year Godzilla stuff, is that the characters inside the story truly believe what they're doing. There really is a United Nations Godzilla Countermeasure Center. People are really honored to be members of the JXSDF. This is a real problem in their universe. That they're, you know what I mean? Like, they are immersed inside their universe, and that's what I love about it, because they take it seriously. We, the viewer, may not need to take it 100% seriously because we're in a movie theater, right? But those characters take it seriously. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So to that point, it's just weird to have this wall that it's almost like they didn't even bother to explain it because it was self-explanatory, but it's not even close to self-explanatory. Walls have never worked throughout history. Walls wouldn't even work for your cat, you know?
Right. Like, right.
I mean, if you build a wall in your backyard and your backyard goes 115 feet and that wall has a 1 foot gap in it, but covers 114 feet, that cat's going to figure out where the hole is, right?
Right, right.
So you can build this wall wherever you want, but they'll find the hole. And it's the kind of thing that clearly drove me crazy. I clearly have the biggest problem with it out of anybody on the face of the earth. And I don't even want to hide behind the fact that it didn't work. You know what I mean? Because it would be easy to say, oh, Mutavor tore through the wall in Sydney, therefore I'm right. But right. I don't want to look at it like that. I want to look at it before that happened. Why did we divert funds from the Jaeger program to build a wall?
Yeah. I'm going to read this from Travis Beecham's Tumblr.
Yeah,
someone's posed the question to him. Here's something that bothered me for forever. Why on earth did anyone think that the wall would work? Even if it was able to keep a kaiju out for long, wouldn't it still eventually find a way in? And it wouldn't neutralize the kaiju either. Was it merely intended as a short-term solution while they tried to find a cheaper kaiju-killing method? And Travis Beecham's answer is, well, the mechs are dropping like flies, and some ambitious but uncreative contractor comes to the world's governments and says, hey guys, how about you pay me to build you a nice big anti-kaiju wall? He need not even care if it works, really. And, well, politicians tend to be an especially unimaginative lot. They get walls. They like walls. They have faith in walls. It's a word they can really sell. It sounds very resolute in speeches, very firm and uncompromising. A wall, in short, it's meant to read as the sort of infuriatingly reductive idea that mediocre politicians tend to swarm to.
Sorry, I didn't catch because of our audio link. Was there a money number in there? Was there a number?
No, there was no number.
Okay.
There was no number. Yes. And I actually take a little bit of issue with his response, only because when they talk about what happens in Pacific Rim, it's all about the world coming together. And that's really what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be this story about how people forget their differences and they work together to make these mechs, to make the Jaegers. And this sort of like brings people back to that sort of slimy underbelly that you don't really want to have proposing a change that's going to affect the world. And that's what he's sort of saying is happening here. But no, there's no money number involved. There's just money involved. Somebody just saying, oh, yeah, I can build a wall for cheap. It'll cost you a lot less than one of those mechs.
Hmm. All right. Well, since we're on the money subject, let's go ahead and get to the money.
Okay.
get to the money.
I'm just going to throw a couple facts out there. Fact number one, worldwide GDP was $70 trillion in 2012. Mm-hmm. That's 70,000 billion, right? Using some very quick inflation estimates, that would mean that worldwide GDP in 2020, and I'm going to oversimplify this, is about $100 trillion. 100,000 billion. Yeah. Right? One Jaeger costs $60 billion, which is a lot. Just to put that into scope, it's impossible to put into scope. You can't do it. It's such a big number that everybody's little brains, including mine, can't fathom it. But I can tell you this. I can tell you a stealth bomber costs $1 billion. So if you tell me one Jaeger costs as much as 60 stealth bombers, okay. I think I can get behind that. I think that seems like a pretty realistic estimate, right?
Okay.
I mean, it doesn't need to be invisible to radar. We know that because it needs to kill kaiju. We don't need, you know, again, to your point, Kyle, the world is coming together. When we look at this, if we do the same thing with GDP that we do with defense spending, then what we see is in the year 2020, if I just look at the top 9 countries, if I say, how much did you spend in 2012 and how much would that be in 2020? Then only the top 9 countries spent almost $2,000 billion or $2 trillion on defense.
Mm-hmm.
One kaiju is $60 billion. If you do some quick math, you will see that that means that $1 trillion can make you 17 Jaegers.
Yep.
$2 trillion can make you 34 Jaegers. In 1 year, only 17 Jaegers ever existed. So, in one half of 1 year's defense spending only, you can completely finance the Jaegers using just the top 9 countries. Did you follow that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes.
So the bottom line is, as expensive as they are, we're already spending it on defense.
Did all of these countries have Jaegers of their own?
They didn't. If I look at the top 9 countries in terms of defense budgets, I get U.S., China, Japan, so we're 3 for 3, Germany, no, France, no, UK, no, Brazil, no, but close enough to maybe care, right? Mm-hmm. Russia, yes, India, no, but again, possibly close enough to care. So that was only 3 Atlantic Rim countries,
gotcha.
Right? And then, even if they say, no, we don't want to help, which would be ridiculous, of course they would help. Then you can cut that budget down. But again, an important thing there is I only looked at the top 9 countries and I compared basically the top 9 countries' defense spending to the entire world of GDP. I mean, I think we all know what GDP is, but GDP stands for gross domestic product. And it's really what people use as a way to measure economic output. It is the dollar value of everything a country makes that's not black market. And hey, speaking of, we haven't even figured in the black market financing that clearly exists in this world, right?
Imagine how much they'd have if they legalized pot.
Yeah.
They should legalize kaiju bone marrow.
Exactly. In 2020, just the legalized sales from Colorado pot and kaiju black market parts would be enough to finance. So to kind of bring it all together, you didn't need to make an either or decision. By taking just the money we spend in a year on defense, we could build enough Jaegers to defend the world. We wouldn't have to do anything other than just reallocate the resources we have that are currently being used on defense. And that doesn't even factor in the kind of mobilization that people would do in the face of kaiju coming through an interdimensional portal and annihilating our cities.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's it. The defense rests.
The defense. Okay. Yeah. While you were talking, I looked up the single most expensive piece of military equipment ever, and came up with an aircraft carrier called the USS Gerald R. Ford. Which I don't think really bodes well for its ability to stay in the, you know, stay in the water. But
the question is, did they go down presidents and then finally get to Ford? And he was like, yeah, I'll sign off on that.
Probably, yeah. It's like Millard Fillmore couldn't have done that. Billion.
How much?
$11.5 billion.
What is this thing?
It's an aircraft carrier.
That's it?
It is the lead ship in a new class of aircraft carriers.
Wow.
You're talking about like 15 seconds worth of research for that, though. So
is it like at least an executor class aircraft carrier or something?
Yeah, I think Vader is going to be living on it and calling the Emperor on a daily basis.
Man, that's crazy. I mean, that again, but I think that's within reason. You know, I'd have to think that aircraft carrier is, I don't know, a fourth the size of a Jaeger or something like that. I mean, I couldn't even imagine how big that thing would have to be $11 billion.
Oh, no, I would say it's probably bigger than a Jaeger. If you're talking about like maybe standing it up on its end, yeah. I'd say it's bigger than a Jaeger.
That's true. That's true.
Because the Jaegers are measured in vehicle height from those on those blueprints.
And this thing,
the reason it costs so much money, I think, is because of the landing and takeoff surface. And then they've got a bunch of new technology, it says. So, yeah.
Do either of you guys see anything I missed?
Not, I would say
you were pretty thorough.
your research, sir, definitely dwarfs any research I've done on Pacific Rim. And I would also say that, just seriously, just some things that I would say you've missed. From the fact that Travis Beecham has answered some questions about who attacked Manila and Cabo, you know, like those kind of things. He's got the kaiju names on his blog.
Okay.
But I mean, that's it. I mean, and that's what I care about is the monsters. So.
that's all well good, your financial analysis and crap, but you missed a couple names.
Yeah, man, you're just talking about numbers, dude.
Stop blinding me with numbers, man. So thanks for listening to me rant. That was it. I needed to rant on Pacific Rim, and I needed to have some giant monster guys to talk through it with.
Oh, yeah, totally understand. I needed to rant, too.
did you want to rant about anything else?
Go for it, man.
Well, my biggest problem, not numbers related, so maybe it's not related to the show, and I already talked about it on my show, was the two brains. Like, the stuff about the dinosaurs?
Yes.
Drove me bananas. That drove me nuts.
Yeah.
Now, wasn't there some sort of Travis Beecham counter to that, Kyle?
Kind of backpedaled.
Okay.
I don't buy it.
Yeah.
he said that Newt was alluding to the myth, but I think if you watch the movie, it's pretty clear that he's trying to say that dinosaurs had two brains.
Yeah, he does not ever at one point say the myth of the two brains. Yeah. You know.
Because it was Hannibal and him talking, and it was Hannibal who said two brain, or was it Hannibal?
Oh, no, he was talking to Stacker.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Stacker, the other guy, was the one who said, you know, two brains like a dinosaur.
Oh, maybe it was. And it might have been Hannibal, actually, now that I think about it.
Yeah. And then Newt said, yes. He didn't say, oh, yeah, that's a myth, but yeah.
Yeah.
He said, yes.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and check it, but the novelization is a bit more incriminating on the two brains thing because they do spend a little bit more time when he's in his own brain just thinking through stuff. And again, that's a very cool thing about the novelization because Newt might be running down the street trying not to get killed by Otachi, but you're going through his brain as he's running down the street. And okay. He might, you know, so that's the great thing. There's a lot of internal thought processes there that only a book can give you. And that's what makes it cool. But I do think there's a bit more in there about the two brain thing. And I don't really remember there being much of a whole, well, it's the myth of the two brains.
Right, right.
And that's something I learned when I was, you know, 6 years old.
Is that dinosaurs did not have two brains?
That it was an old myth and that dinosaurs only had one brain. So anybody who had spent, you know, even a little bit of time studying dinosaurs or learning about dinosaurs would have heard that myth only to have it debunked.
What is a dinosaur?
It's a...
Okay.
Okay, so I'm one of those people, Andy, because I didn't know about the two brain thing being a myth until I heard you say it on your podcast.
Oh, and see, that's, you know, that was my beef with the thing is perpetuating this myth.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You can have, you know, obviously a Jaeger is physically impossible. You know, okay, I'll give him a pass on that. But when you're perpetuating a myth that, you know, with 30 seconds of Wikipedia research, you could have debunked yourself.
Yeah.
That
just adding in like an extra five words into your or less probably to the dialogue.
And especially since he's gone on his Tumblr and said, "Oh yeah, no, I knew that." He was alluding to the myth. I was like, "Oh, come on, just say, oh yeah, I was wrong, whatever."
So there you have it. Unless I'm missing some really advanced mathematical stuff that my little pea brain can't comprehend, the timing between kaiju attacks didn't follow any sort of mathematical pattern to anticipate the next one. And in terms of the economic decision, do we build Jaegers or do we build an anti-kaiju wall? We could build 17 Jaegers just using the top 9 nations' defense budgets from this year. Okay, you could factor in a little bit more money for the upkeep, for the maintenance, for the training programs, for all those things. But really, you never needed to make a decision. There is no decision. You can fund both easily if that's really what you want to do. A final note. In case you were wondering where I got all the information for the data used on this podcast.
So how long did it take you to do this paperwork?
Yeah, this is impressive.
Oh, good. Well, I like to hear that. The research took a long time. The really tricky thing, I could not be happier. So if you're looking at the kaiju timing one, the novelization had all that stuff in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I just started listening to the audio.
Have you read the novelization yet?
No.
Kyle, have you read it, finished it?
No, I literally just yesterday started listening to the audiobook.
Yeah. So I listened to the audio and bought the paperback and then was talking to Stephen Schilling. And he, I don't know, he just randomly said, "My God, the audiobook of the novelization is so cool. I highly recommend it." And I'm thinking like, why did I not get the audiobook instead of the paperback? You know, like if you look around in my studio, I have like 14 books I haven't read. And yet I need to eat up time on my 1 hour each way commute every day. Like, how did I not see this problem before? You know, so I did the audiobook, listened to it, and then it was great. All actually, because I had the paperback to back it up. But you'll see that this information is just hunt and pecked through the audiobook. Like, they have dossiers on all of the main Jaegers, and all of the main Jaegers, it has all their kills they listed. And then, so all I did was just chronicle every kaiju kill that was listed.
Yeah, you did.
I didn't include every other one. I know. So I came up with 38 kills, and when I was listening to the audiobook, anytime I would hear a bit of information where I thought to myself, like, yes, this fills in such an amazing void, I literally remarked out loud. So one time I was in the car, and I think the girls were in the car with me, Rachel's girls, and they mentioned a part where a guy casually mentions to Raleigh that a Jaeger costs $60 billion. And I literally went like, yes! You know? And it was like, I guarantee that is the only time anyone has pumped their fist on the dollar value of a fictitious item.
That's awesome, dude. That's rad.
Special thanks to Kyle Yount for joining me on this episode. You can check out his podcast at www.kaijucast.com. And thanks to Andy Campbell for hanging out as well. You can check out his podcast, Kaiju 101, at www.kaiju101.com and get all kinds of good stuff on the science behind monsters. So that does it for this episode, and we'll catch you next time when we talk about Star Wars.